for instance, I do Palestine. Someone else does Iran. Someone else does Egypt. So that the person sits in, they have some expertise and knowledge and feel comfortable. And then in some cases, by the second show, they were able to do it all by themselves. So within a collective structure, that's obviously a lot easier. And at KPFK, the IT program council has been trying to encourage more and more the formation of more and more collectives. But individual hosts could also be doing this. And, you know, I don't know how we get people to do it, but I think that we need to start developing some kind of plan like that. And I agree with Nathan. Instead of a slot, you know, that's the youth hour, that people may or may not listen to, trying to give people some training and skills, and, you know, like a five-minute segment in a show as a start. And it's a way to start opening up space and, I think, reaching out to new audiences as well.
Yeah, Margaret, I'd like to get on the set.
Go ahead. I think, Margaret, Lisa was trying to get onto the to say something, weren't you, Lisa? Lisa? Oh, Lord, okay. Go ahead, Margaret.
Yeah, sorry about that. Sharon, I think this is a great idea, and we actually have had some experience in doing that. We started with a show, a Sojourner Youth training program, where the youth came in on Sundays for like about, I don't know, 6 weeks or so, and were trained in hosting and producing and research, that sort of thing, and with the understanding that they would be able to produce a segment that would be entirely youth produced, youth hosted, et cetera, and that I would give airtime, you know, during a drive time hour. It really worked. The program really worked well. The problem, and also I'll have to say that, you know, some talent came out of that. I mean, when I was ill last year and in the hospital, it was one of the Sojourner Youth, one of the young men that came in and hosted the show. And I had a little bit of a discussion with Armando about it because he was a little hesitant to do it. But the guy clearly was very talented, had gone through the program, and was perfectly capable, you know, of doing it. So it has been done. The problem I found was that there was very, really little support, you know, for it. You know, youth were coming down to the station. We had to organize transport, like two vans for black and brown youth every Sunday morning, and, you know, finding people to do the training and that sort of thing. But I found that they were really enthusiastic, you know, ranging in ages from like 13 to college-age students. They were just so excited. Danny Glover came down one Sunday morning and, you know, and met them. And they really want to do that this sort of thing. And just to add to that, I think with the technology now of the ISDN lines, but I understand there's something even more advanced than the ISDN lines, where youth could work from their communities. Like if there's a community center that youth, you know, gather for after school or, you know, whatever, you know, those types of activities, that it's possible that without having to then make the trek down to the station, that some training could happen within the community and also production could happen from within the community. There's no reason why youth couldn't do, you know, even a 5 minute thing, a 10 minute thing, a 15 minute thing. Sojourner Youth, they did a half hour slot, but you don't have to be that ambitious about it. So I think that we need it. We need to build that youth audience. I agree that it's not just having like an hour, but it doesn't have to be either or. It could be both things. And I really think that it's urgent that we make this sort of activity a priority and make it happen consistently throughout the network in the coming year.
This is Kathy. I'd like to get on the stack.
Go ahead, Kathy.
I think that this is a good idea. And in BAI, we do a lot of training. We have a lot of youth coming through, as well as homeless and even seniors coming through and getting training and contributing in different ways. But I think it's important for us to realize that this need also presents a good opportunity to fundraise for the stations, you know, through grants and things like that, because there's a lot of money circulating for those kind of specific purposes, and that might be motivation for the stations as well as for producers who might be enlisted to do training, that they would be able to get some kind of stipend to manage and train some of these programs.
For training for intergenerational programming, you mean?
Generational youth, training young people, training seniors. Right now I'm applying to AARP. They have a program that if you bring in seniors, that they'll pay those seniors for you. So I'm looking for different programs that can help infuse money, if not into the station, at least to support the people in the production of the work.
I have a question related to this, and that's, why can't we encourage, but why can't we encourage programmers that have been on the air for a significant period of time to take time off and work to train youth, to work to develop collectives and stuff like that, to use their experience to get other voices on the air? I mean, some of us, at some of our stations, there is a real, real problem with programs that just go on and on and on and on forever.
Mm-hmm.
And people run out of things to say after a certain period of time. So sabbaticals would be a great thing. But how could you, how could you tie some of those things together is my question.
But Rob, I don't know if you have a list or not, but it seems to me that that's very threatening, whereas bringing, encouraging people to bring a younger person, particularly person of color, in to start helping produce and eventually co-host and maybe produce segments is a lot less threatening, and then it could lead to the kind of thing Margaret talked about. You know, she was gone, when she was in the hospital, so this guy came in. Or, people might be more willing to gradually give up some time. I think, my experience at programmers' meeting, when I've made various suggestions, like how about those people, who are on weekly, go on every other week, and that 1 hour... in 2 weeks opens up a time slot. People are really unwilling, and the people who've been on the longest are the most unwilling. So I think by trying to encourage bringing someone in to start co-producing, co-hosting is a more gradual way of accomplishing it.
Okay.
I mean, that's just based on the reactions I get when I raise any of these kinds of issues amongst programmers.
I don't really, at least in New York, I don't really see that. We have a lot of collectives, and many of our producers will bring in trainees for like 3 to 6 week cycles to do training and programming. And we also have 3 open slots that we rotate new programmers through, giving them opportunities to produce, sometimes as, pilot programs. And so that I think that that's also another solution is to, as spots become open, or to create windows that are meant to stay open and allow people to rotate through.
Can I just clarify? I think you misunderstood what I was saying, Kathy. It wasn't to not, because Rob was suggesting that we tell people that they should train someone, but they should no longer be on the air, and that's where the resistance is.
Well, I've talked to several general managers at non-commercial stations on the East Coast that either say that they have a policy that after a set period of time, usually 4 or 5 years, they enforce sabbaticals. Another very successful affiliate station in Florida that we work with, the program director makes people rebid for their shows. I think it's every 2 years, regardless. It doesn't mean they can't come back, but they say you've got to completely come back and pitch a show all over again. And I simply think that one of the things that many people at stations would find rewarding, although they may not think of it, is working with younger people and showing them. I mean, there are lots of things that I can think of that our public affairs programmers could do. They could let young people come on and introduce the guests. They could give a rundown on what's on the show at the following week or at the beginning of the week. We could provide space for young people to promote the shows throughout the week that are coming on. We just don't do that. And any more on New Voices?
I should tell people that I'm taking kind of very cryptic notes that I will send out. I mean, really cryptic, like some points that if people can add to it, so that, because I think we've had a lot of really good discussion, one of the more productive discussions I think we've had.
Let's talk a little bit more about. I mean, we haven't gotten to this yet, but I'd like to talk about it a little bit about the notion of. I'd like to hear in my signal area wonderful shows that are produced elsewhere. I can't do that. What does everybody think about the possibility of moving successful local station shows to two national audiences? And I guess the first question I have is, how do we know now what are the shows at local stations that are building audience? I certainly don't know which ones those are at our stations. In our discussions of the program schedules, we've never said, this show is really catching fire, so on and so forth. So could we switch gears and talk about elevating shows from local audiences to national audiences, beginning with a discussion of how do we identify what's a hot local station show?
Well, that gets back to evaluation. The first part of it gets back to the question of evaluation.
Mm-hmm. I think, this is Kathy, I think one of the ways that I can tell that a show is popular is by the phone calls that come in during the program, but that would localize it to an extent that I don't know how much that would be useful. So my sense is that live programs that interact with the audience have the best measure of how popular they are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can I ask, does anyone, and Margaret, for instance, do you upload not just whole shows, but also segments? Because I remember Nathan mentioning that it's very helpful if we all started thinking about uploading segments for stations to use. I mean, would this be a way to start where someone, where a station may not want to take a full hour of a program as a way to start introducing some of the shows produced at the other signal areas? Does anyone upload to the audio port A, full shows, and B, segments of shows? I don't know, Nathan, you may have a general overview of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Margaret, for the stack.
Go ahead, Margaret.
Yeah, I think, Rob and Sherna, you're both raising really good points. On the, just to start with the latter, on audio port, many of us, I've been going around trying to find out how you get the ID or whatever it is, so that you could get on audio port, and for some reason, people don't have it or whatever. Oh, and
Margaret,
right
Margaret,
now,
I can set it up for you. If you shoot me an email, I'll set it up for you Monday.
Oh, wonderful! Because right now, a producer had said that she would do it, but then she goes up as the producer, even though she doesn't really produce the show, and half the time it also doesn't get up for, people forget or whatever the reasons are. But, I think it is a good idea because I know that affiliates are out there, looking for shows. And, at the station, I mean, I'm more familiar with the morning shows than I am, with the afternoon shows. People pretty much know, which shows are really, successful and growing and have it together and which shows aren't. If you ask me to say, well, what are the measures that they use? I don't know if it's the phone calls that come in, the comments that come in, the performance during the drive. I think my guess is that it's all of the, all of the above. The response when you go out into the community, when KPFK has an event, and you mention a certain show. You get a response from the audience. You mention something else, and you don't get a response from the audience. So I can't put forward like a scientific way of it happening, but I do know that unpaid programmers are at a real disadvantage for any even segments, not to mention the full show, going up and having access to the national audience, because there, frankly speaking, there is that double standard. I mean, the paid programmers, they have production support, so that immediately after their show, they could get it up on AudioPort, they could put it on their web page, they can send you the description of what just happened or whatever. But for somebody who has to hightail it and get to their job,
mm-hmm.
or their other stuff, they just cannot do it. And the support just has not been there to allow them to do it. So it means that the ones who really have access to this stuff are the paid programmers, and the unpaid programmers just forget about it. So I just think Nathan, and for all, anybody who's going to be on programming next year, that this is an ongoing issue that really has to be addressed, because we're really missing out on a lot of good stuff. And it also goes back to the on-air promos, because you could have a great show, but, I've been advised, well, it's really great if you can just do a promo. Let's say that's up on Mondays. Well, excuse me, on Mondays, I'm doing other work. I'm not down at the station, right?
Mm-hmm.
But couldn't somebody else do the read? Does it have to be in my, because that also brings in an audience. I mean, being the gentleman who talked about not everybody is online is absolutely true, but they may hear a promo on the radio. So that doesn't happen. So I really think that this is an area that without a lot of work and even without a lot of resources, that much more can be done to make things more accessible, Rob, to a broader audience.
This is Kathy. I just wanted to mention that, for programmers to put their programs on AudioPort is very useful to someone like me. I take dozens of programs down from AudioPort to broadcast from other stations, over a given period. So perhaps if that were more formalized, and there was some system, or if I, of reporting and letting the producers know that the program might have been taken aired somewhere, that is the incentive for them to do the work, to get it up there. And it's also an opportunity for people who don't have regular shows.
Can I ask Nathan a question? Do you have anyone else on
this? Sure, can I just interrupt for a second? Mm-hmm.
Bonnie.
It's Bonnie, and I'm sorry, I have people coming to pick me up in 10 minutes, so
okay.
I'm going to have to jump off the phone, but thank you. I enjoyed listening to the conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Nathan, you and I had talked about the issue of how to prepare the program in a way that makes it easier or more likely for an affiliate to pick it up, in terms of how we do the IDs, not just making the station ID, but making sure that we're saying Pacifica, et cetera, et cetera. Can you write up a really detailed description of four programmers that we could distribute to the unpaid programmers, at all the stations, that there is this opportunity to put up your shows on the audio board in a rundown of the shows, but this is what you need to do. So that, I think that is one way of, and particularly, for instance, our Spanish language programmers, that would be a fantastic opportunity if they knew how to do this and could get some of the Spanish language programs up for some of the stations that have a dearth of Spanish language programming, and for the affiliates. Is there some way that you could prepare a really step-by-step thing of, you know, what to do and what not to do as well, Nathan?
I actually, not exactly step-by-step per se, but I do have on my blog right now, there's this is actually written by Ernesto, but he cribbed a lot of it from some text that I put together as well. If you go to my blog, there's a little page there called 10 Radio Syndication Tips Plus 5 Mistakes.
Oh, okay.
And the blog address is just pacificaradio.wordpress.com.
Well, Nathan, you send us all emails so that we could then forward that to our...
Sure.
You know, because we have a listserv of unpaid programmers that we've set up.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that would... We could, Margaret and I could write some little intro to it and explain, you know, how important this is and what this could mean.
Sure.
And give them the URL. That would be great.
Sure. In terms of some of the other more specific, you know, that doesn't get super specific. It's more like, here's the work that really has to be done. You know, here, you know, make sure you prepare for, you know, calling stations and make sure you prepare for doing the work and all that kind of thing. And I don't really, in that particular article, Ernesto doesn't go into it as much. There are some, I guess, fairly standard things that stations tend to look for, you know, a regular length of either 28 or 29 minutes or somewhere in between. You know, basic stuff like lack of station IDs, because, you know, that then screws up the local station. They have to jump in and give their own local station ID if there's another station's ID that goes out. You know, all that kind of thing. You know, some of the nuts and bolts, and I can send you some of that as well separately if you like.
Great.
I'll just send that to you and Margaret.
So are we all kind of in agreement that a way to start anyhow would be to get more up on the audio port, and at each station also encouraging people both to load but also to look at what's there.
Yes, I think so. This is Margaret. And if there's any other place besides AudioPort, somebody told me that there's some other system besides AudioPort as well, but I really am not familiar with it.
AudioPort.org is Pacifica's own distribution method. There are a zillion other distribution methods out there. One that's fairly popular among the community radio crowd is a site called RadioForAll.net. It's run by a guy in New York. John knows his name. I used to, but I've forgotten it. You know, it's all well and good. AudioPort has faster uploads and downloads, and it's specifically for the 135 stations in the network. So, you know, it's more reliable, I think. And it's also being upgraded, so it's going to have more functionality in the coming year.
Mm. Can we move the discussion along and try to finish by...
Okay, let's try to get done. The last thing is the development of national programming. Nathan, can you share with us some of your successes and frustrations in that regard? And talk to us about what are some things that we can do at the board level to help you, like allocate more money or whatever.
Sure. I mean... you know, national programming, you know, coming into the job, a lot of national programming really, you know, revolves around national specials at this point, because there's just not, I mean, you know, getting access to airspace even locally is pretty tough. Launching a new national show from scratch is damn near impossible at, you know, in current circumstances. That said, we, you know, we are actually launching this 8-minute election news module, which is great. It's I think going to be pretty good. It's on a fairly shoestring budget as far as that goes, but it'll be a really hot little news piece that that stations can insert into their existing program grids. And so that's cool. I'm very encouraged by that, and the stations are very interested, you know. So that's wonderful. Some of the national specials and such not, I mean, it's just tough to find airtime is probably one of the bigger challenges. but also tough to find monetary resources at times. You all know, I'm sure, about the finance and budget woes of the network. That has certainly extended to national office budget, which, to my understanding, national office budget hasn't been approved yet for the fiscal year. That includes my budget for national programming, which, you know, I mean, it just, I don't want to put any blame anywhere. It just makes it difficult to plan out national programming when I don't know how much money is going to be there, you know. So anyway, beyond that, yeah, we've had some good successes, I think. You know, some of the national specials we've done got really good carriage, beginning last year with International Women's Day and rolling up through various specials that are in production now, even. Some more than others. Obviously, the things that make one more successful than another in terms of carriage are fairly predictable things. You know, lots of notice, a format that fits well with stations' existing schedules, a lot of communication about, like, you know, when it's coming up and you know, who's involved and getting promos out there early, all that kind of thing. Of course, that's not always possible, especially in terms of those congressional hearings and things. A lot of those were, you know, they're scheduled within 5-6 days, sometimes less, of the actual hearing date. So those are less than easy to get off the ground. You know, I've found a lot of cooperation in the last year on the part of a lot of producers. A lot of people are really interested in doing national programming and really want to be involved and get on it. It's definitely an incremental process in terms of figuring out what an infrastructure might look like, especially given kind of like lack of access to airtime from national office. And I understand the reasons for it, but it does make it difficult to like kind of figure out how to reach out and find great producers and plug them into you know, national platforms, when the national platform, if you will, is a very small piece of plywood over there, you know, to take that metaphor one step further. You know, it's how to, you know, there's a lot of people that want to get up on it. They just don't realize there's not much there. But, you know, I'm trying to build it out a little bit, bit by bit, and sort of try and demonstrate through good programming that you know, really good national programming can very well complement local programming and strengthen both. I think looking at Democracy Now! is certainly the most obvious example of how that happens.
Mm-hmm. Nathan, could you tell us what, besides the election, coverage is in the works right now in terms of national programming, you know, either specials or segments?
Sure. Also working on Black History Month programming. There's going to be a series of 22-minute modules for each weekday in February, as well as five or six,
See, 2 minutes, you're saying?
Yeah, 2 minutes, Okay. Yeah, interstitial, basically. You know, they can drop in any time during the day. Also, half a dozen 5 to 7 minute feature cutaways that go into more depth about some Black History Month related matter. Those are being coordinated by Cassandra Ashley at KPFT and a whole crew of people down there, and we've got folks involved from all around the network, so I'm looking forward to hearing what they come up with there. Other things definitely in production. February 5th, the basically national primary, where half the population is going to be voting in the primaries that day. That night's election coverage, obviously, is going to be a big one. That's going to be housed at KPFA. I need to talk with Armando and figure out what the story is with State of the Union this year. If Kay is going to be doing that, we can just start putting together plans here pretty quickly. And then, you know, I mean, we kind of tentatively plan to broadcast it, but we need to put together more specific plans. There's also a guy named Evan Davis who is in Ohio. He's done a lot of reporting for Free Speech Radio News. He's working on a documentary for very little funding, frankly. He's practically volunteer. That is going to actually look at strip mining in Appalachia and New Mexico on the Dinho Reservation. And I think it might be the first time comparing the two, sort of linked by this environmental devastation. Should be a really interesting piece. He's expecting that to come out around March, maybe early April. I'm forgetting something. There's something else coming up.
I assume we're going to have International Women's Day programming again, and then also about Al-Nakba 60th anniversary Al-Nakba programming that
Yeah. Both of those are on my calendar, to be sure. We're still 2 months out from International Women's Day and 3.5 from Nakba, so I haven't started the gears in motion on those quite yet, but coming up before too long.
Now, is there a way that you could follow up? I mean, I love the idea, and I think it's probably something that is more likely to happen. These modules, these 2-minute modules and these 5 to 7 minute feature cutaways, are you able to monitor what gets picked up?
At present, the best I can do is with AudioPort. AudioPort will tell me how many downloads there have been of any given program. AudioPort right now is not rigged up to tell me who downloaded it or if they played it. The only way to really do that is to, and Ursula does this from time to time, usually, once or twice a year, it's been a couple times a year, calling around pretty much all the affiliates and asking, hey, did you pick up this? Did you carry that? This kind of thing. And she tends to get, out of 120 stations, 80 or so to respond usually and say, well, yes or no. And those are the 80 more active ones anyway. So it becomes a fairly accurate number, but it's also pretty labor intensive, as you can imagine, to track down that many stations.
Any way to set up the software so that at least you know who downloaded it, and there could be a follow-up then if they actually played it or not?
Yeah, there's no question about that. I guess there's some privacy concerns. Pete Krakus has some privacy concerns about sort of keeping track of who downloads what, but I'm trying to figure out a way that I can address his privacy concerns and also, be able to track who's downloading what. So it would actually be very, very helpful, and we'll see. I think in the AudioPort upgrade rolling out sometime this year, I'm hoping that'll be part of it.
This is Kathy.
Yep.
But isn't this a factor that should be decided by maybe the network or this committee and not the programmer?
Come again?
Well, I understand that Pete Caracas has some privacy concerns,
mm-hmm.
but he's in truth, the programmer.
Hmm.
Shouldn't those concerns be decided by either this committee or the network and not by one person?
Mm-hmm.
I would just note that, the staff person hired to do a job should be able to do their job, this goes way back to like when AudioPort first rolled out, which I think was back in 2004 or something. So it's been
Margaret
a while.
Margaret would like to get on the stack.
Okay, Margaret.
I think if there's enough call for it, it'll happen.
Okay. Well, I brought that up because I have another concern about the process or what I've experienced in producing national programming and working on national programs. Things, have been a little bit different, I suppose, since you've been hired. But I know on several occasions when I tried to do something that I was pretty much stopped in the process by the affiliates program.
Wow.
So I'm wondering if there could be some kind of uniform process that wouldn't have to go necessarily through the affiliates program, but that regular producers and the affiliate program would follow the same guidelines.
Can you tell us why you were stopped, Kathy? Give us a case in point.
For instance, I think the first National Women's Day broadcast was produced in New York by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And when I decided to do that, I was able to call Michael Yoshida to find out if the ISDN lines were available and reserve them. I was able to communicate with the various stations and directly to the producers through the Pacifica Announce. and was able to pull together participation, and it was a beautiful broadcast.
Yeah, it was a good broadcast. What's the
then
problem?
Then the next time around, when I tried to do that, I wasn't allowed, my Galashita wasn't allowed to communicate with me to check and reserve space. I had to go through Ursula, who took her time. And, you know, and it kind of put the whole process at a disadvantage. And, you know, I found myself kind of pushed up to the side of the process. I won't say pushed out of the process. And then the same occurred when we were doing the Indigenous programming of Day of Indigenous
Margaret.
And I had actually proposed that a month earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I wasn't able to get a reservation or an answer until almost just a week before the actual event. So there was no time to really, we got on the air, there was no time to promote it. There was no time for stations to decide to take it because everything was, my efforts were, had to go through this other channel. And discouraged me from being able to do that or wanting to do it.
Yeah, let me just address those concerns sort of quickly. I mean, Ursula, and in cooperation with Verna and John, and put together at some point or another in the last probably about a year before I came on board, they put together a sort of regularized system for applying for national broadcast, and it's still there. I've modified it some. It's essentially a pitch form that you know asks potential producers to consider, you know, what exactly the content is going to be, what the staffing is going to be, what the budget is going to look like, and what the tech is going to look like. And it's just a mechanism to consider those things. I think the first part of what you said is an important part, which is that, you know, this is before I came on board, and, you know, Ursula, on top of coordinating, you know, well over 100 stations, you know, also for quite a while was really holding up the other end of things with national specials, which is, you know, I mean, that's a lot of hours when there's a national special going on. So I definitely recognize that she had a lot of work. I don't want to speak to, you know, what may or may not have gone on before I came on board because I simply don't know. But you know, I mean, I just ask that we, you know, sort of figure out what we're going to do better in the future.
Well, that's basically what I'm saying is that I would like for there to be a system that applies equally
sure,
to everyone who wants to initiate a program.
Sure. Yeah, we've got a pitch form. I might even have it online. It's definitely online at, I believe, techport.org, but there's, you know, anybody who wants to pitch a national special. At this point, I should hope knows to just, you know, drop me a call or an email, and I generally try and get back pretty quickly, although occasionally I end up with a bit of a backlog of emails. I'll either explain, you know, what I need, or I'll just, you know, email back the pitch form, and that, you know, has tended to work out okay.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, that's fine. So that's fine, but I haven't had that experience with you.
Okay.
So I don't know what your standards are because
the last time
I tried there, the standards were very prohibitive.
Uh-huh.
And I think also, you know, what happened initially with the program that I produced, Women's Day, and also with the program for the Indigenous programming, it really wasn't a matter of budget.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any real budget, for the most part, included. So, I mean, a national program can be produced by unpaid producers, as well as it can be paid producers. It doesn't necessarily have to include a huge budget.
Sure.
Well, Kathy, if I understand Nathan, I mean, he's saying that I don't know what happened before, but he does have a system now that seems to be fair, from what I've heard about it anyhow.
Okay.
Margaret was asking to get on the Substack. Margaret, are you there? Margaret? Hello?
Can you hear me?
We can now.
Okay, sorry about that. I was on mute for a moment. I think the issue that just came up about the privacy, the concern about privacy issues, I think that it does need a kind of a broader discussion. I mean, if there is concern by Pete or by anybody else about privacy issues, this is certainly something that the board should be aware of, or the ED or the IED or something, so that the input, you know, because that's really an important thing. And we need to know about that, and we need to come to some conclusion where I agree it, you know, it can't just be the one person just can't make a decision like that. I think that it needs a broader discussion. So it's the first I've heard of it. So I'm glad that it came to this committee. And I think it would be good in any report to the full board from the programming committee that this be included as a concern, because we do want to know who is carrying what. You know, it really would be useful to figure that out. So I just wanted to say that. And the other thing I wanted to say, too, about the specials like International Women's Day. Now, the format was changed, I think, last year. The previous format, I think, stations were kind of allowed an hour or 2 hours. I can't remember quite how it worked. So that the stations themselves were able to, you know, to produce programming during those hours. And I actually thought that worked quite well, and it allowed for a certain amount of autonomy on the on the part of the station, but yet it was coordinated because people knew what the various stations wanted to carry, so that there wouldn't be any overlap. I mean, there's a way of sorting that out. And, you know, I felt a little uncomfortable with the newer system that was put in place, even though I understand the reason for it. And, you know, to me, it's best to, you know, it's always good to, if something is working, you know, why fix it? So in that particular thing, in terms of International Women's Day programming, I felt that it really worked for the stations themselves to be able to, you know, produce that programming. And I know that there were several women, for example, at KPFK, because that's what I know about, that participated in it. And the way it was done this past year, I honestly, Nathan, I don't quite remember what the system was, but I know it made it more difficult, especially for the, unpaid programmers' participation. So I'm wondering if something could look at the old system and the new system, so to speak, see if there's some things that could be sorted out there.
Yeah, let me address both of those. First of all, John, if you're listening to this, feel free to break in. I earlier said that I think one of the main concerns about keeping download records was over privacy issues. John, can you correct me if I'm wrong about that as being sort of like the primary reason, or help me if there's a supplementary reason?
What is the privacy issue, Nathan? I don't understand what the issue is.
Well, that there's, you know, all these users of AudioPort, and that, you know, we don't want to necessarily, like, keep records of their web use, basically. That's the best I can understand it, that's the way I remember it being said. I don't know if my memory is off on that. So, John, if you remember it differently or have some other explanation, please jump in. That's
John,
fine.
Are you
yeah.
there? You just got us going.
That's all right. Barring that, we'll get into the International Women's Day thing broadcast a little bit. I guess in some previous years it's been kind of a round robin format where each station had like an hour or so. Last year was much more centrally coordinated. We had one coordinating producer and it was a 2 hour broadcast. It was all pre-produced and pre-recorded and uploaded and streamed over the KU satellite. producers and reporters could pitch segments, and then, you know, there's plenty of time for them to go off and do their own production and record it and edit it and make it fairly tight and then pull it together. In terms of a national broadcast, it actually, that was one of the more carried national broadcasts we've had in the last year. I think the U.S. Social Forum was maybe equal to it. Yeah, International Women's Day last year was carried by, you know, 35 stations or something. It was quite a lot. Margaret, I hear you on that. That said, one of the first things when I started asking stations if they wanted to carry International Women's Day programming from national was that they really didn't like how the previous year had been done. that's not in my opinion. I didn't even hear it the year before as I wasn't on the job, but I guess there were concerns over really rough transitions, over inconsistency of the different hours, very different kinds of both quality level and style, and not necessarily in a good way, like plurality of voices kind of way, but kind of like a, you know, like some parts were rough kind of way. And then also just that it went on for a very long time and certain parts of it became redundant. These are just things that I heard last year. So we did this other thing, which was a two-hour program and still included many different producers, I think more than two dozen. I think 26 women were involved in the production of that. So, it's not like we severely reduced the number of people or anything. And the other thing is, in terms of this being a model, it was the model a model where this is the national production, and we hope and expect that stations will carry, or not carry, but the stations will produce their own programming to go along with it at the local level. So it absolutely doesn't preclude the kind of production you're talking about. It just was kind of something for stations that may not be doing anything, bookends or a cornerstone or whatever you want to call it for stations that were doing their own.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to get back on the stack, actually.
You're on it.
Kathy, I will.
Yeah, Nathan, I hear what you're saying. I don't know who you talk to at the various stations, but I think that if there's an issue with quality of programming from station to station, that has to do with the kind of production help that those stations might need. And I do think... From what I recall, the coverage was longer. It was longer than 2 hours, and 2 hours, 26 or how many, a lot of segments in there sounds great, but it also means that it really limits the amount of depth in which you could get into for any one particular thing. And I also thought what I liked about the old system is that it also gave you a flavor of the different stations. You really, when you listen to the, and I actually enjoyed that, listening to KPFT, what KPFT put out, what BAI put out, what KPFA put out, what KPFK put out. It really gives that kind of flavor. So in talking with people and making this assessment to change it to a more centralized system where you've got all these producers then sending proposals to a centralized system to then to be determined if your thing is going to be picked or whatever, I don't know what the and it's not to negate anything, Nathan. You know that I'm a big supporter of yours, and I, you know, I think you've added a lot to what we've been trying to do in terms of programming. But, you know, I have been active on women's issues but practically all of my adult life. And I didn't find that this was, a great improvement, frankly. I thought it was more controlled. It was more centralized. It didn't allow the stations to really be as involved, perhaps, as they could be in autonomous productions, but yet figuring out the ways to smooth it over. And, the example that I have is the fund drive that the archives does. I mean, they do, they've got people from different stations coming in, and they, it's possible to have, coordination in terms of production and yet a certain amount of autonomy is what I'm saying, and yet have good quality. That has got to be, there's got to be a way to do that. I don't think the way to do that, the only way to do that is to compress everything into a two-hour program.
Let me just say, I have to go off the call now. But I do totally support what Margaret was saying, that jumping from station to station where they present their own programming, and in fact it is a way for everyone to get exposure at the national level too, is a model that I like. And I do agree with Margaret on this, but I do have to get off the call. And I want to thank everyone. I think this has been one of our better, more productive discussions and meetings.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Kathy. I just also, if I could,
please
wanted
go ahead,
to
Kathy.
Say that in the core way, in the initial way that it was done, maybe it wasn't as polished, but there was much more of an investment at the local level to care about what was happening. And what happens is when the canned material is just plugged in, the local women resent the taking away of their own expression and their own time. So in New York for the last 2 years, we've done 2 full days of women's programming. So, you know, I've been able to still put in the national piece, but if the local women don't feel invested in it, then they feel they can do better on their own.
Okay.
Quite a number of WBAI women were involved in the national production, though, last year.
I know, but it wasn't. It broadcast, but it wasn't. And it wasn't the same. I mean, the involvement wasn't the same.
Okay. Last year, around this time or next month, this time last year, the program directors basically said, you know, look, 5 hours. We don't want to carry 5 hours. Let's do 2. And let's do a pre-recorded. If that's what I could get them to carry, that's what I rolled with. Maybe this year we'll take these comments under advisement, and I'll be meeting with them again in the coming weeks. So that's cool. I
call them the women are rebelling, these program directors.
How many of the
international women's there? One face crying out loud.
I do have a question also that I don't probably should know but don't know.
Go ahead. You have the floor. Don't give it up until you ask all the questions.
Many of our program directors are women?
1 out of 5.
Okay. We'll take that into consideration.
Sure.
Okay. I have no more questions at this point. The only thing I was curious about, Nathan, is if we had any further consideration this year of doing like a sampler of programming from the different stations on a regular basis.
What do you mean by sampler? Like a CD?
Well,
it
would
a...
be impolitic to call it the best of Pacifica, but if we had if we had something that was produced weekly, that featured different, programming from different stations, or if we selected a different topic periodically. And pulled coverage from the different stations together. I'm just wondering if that old chestnut has had any further consideration this year, or if it's still.
I have a couple times considered putting together a variety of potential promotional type formats. Whether it's like a collection of public affairs shows that all could be made into a strip, for example, and recommending that, something along the lines of thematic content like you're talking about, recommending good, say, Middle East and related, Arab American issues, for example, whatever that might be, pulling that kind of programming together. There hasn't been a giant call for shows that simply cobble together bits and pieces of other shows. I certainly like to highlight that kind of thing from time to time. I've had little, halting starts occasionally at promoting certain things and just bringing attention to certain things in Audioport. I don't know if it's giving those shows a bump or not. but you know, I do like to, you know, promote certain things to our sister and affiliate stations from time to time. It would be good to bring those shows that are already syndicated and that are very good into some kind of more shareable format as well, you know, whether it's a web stream or some other kind of collection online, for example, since that's, you know, we've got access to that, but also, you know, as recommendations for, you know, really solid shows we do for syndication. I think that would be another good venue for that kind of thing, sort of integrated promotions in that fashion. The other thing, and you know, maybe this does actually have to do with best of. This is a different topic somewhat, but what do you all think about, like, Pacifica Program Awards, annual program awards? There's a lot of organizations out there that do this, you know, state broadcasting, broadcasters associations, national, of course. The NFCB used to do community radio golden reels, is what they called them, but it was basically community radio programming awards. They discontinued those 2 or 3 years ago. Would you all have any interest in seeing that happen? I think it would be kind of interesting in terms of bringing Pacifica programmers together as a network and also, you know, kind of showing what we do that's good.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I think anything that would get the stations to begin developing more documentaries and specials would be just terrific.
Okay, okay. Cool. All right, then. Well, maybe that's something I'll work on in the coming year.
Okay, it's 10:30. I have nothing else to add, so unless someone has another point to make, I'd just like to thank everyone that has hung in so far. And
okay, thanks, everybody. Good night.
We'll see you
thank
next
you all
year.
For your comments tonight. I appreciate it very much.
Thank
you.
All right.
Thanks.
Take care.
Night.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.